Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Freemasonry, as we know it, isn't just a single organization. In our next conversation with historian Claire Barris, we're going to talk about the multiple types of masonry there are, and he'll talk about some of the differences between the different organizations, how they relate to Mormonism. Check out our conversation. What do you think, I'll just go with Dan Vogel's thesis again then. Dan says that because Joseph was practicing polygamy and Masonry had these super secret oaths that would bind people to these oaths, that Joseph decided, I'm going to start using Masonry. I'm going to purify it and add it to an endowment ceremony and bind people so that they can keep polygamy a secret, which was still... They still didn't keep it a secret. I don't know how you can do that. But.
Yeah. Well. Okay. So that's a big fast forward from 1830 when the Book of Mormon comes out, and then the Book of Moses is translated that at that point in time to 1842.
Yeah.
And well, so that's a 12-year leap.
Fanny in the middle, though.
And Fanny is in the middle, but then you have the Danites, which come up in the Kirtland, Missouri era. A little bit later on, but they are apparently using Masonic type oaths to swear each other to secrecy and so forth. And Cheryl has published about that. And I don't know much about that, but we have, instead of just anti-Masonry, we now have Masonry being used for secrecy at the very least, and creating a fraternity of Danites that go out and kind of take care of business when we don't secretly take care of business
just
in a
like
violent way
Morgan,
or an
right?
intimidating way, kind of like, perhaps. And then you've kind of referenced in 1842, Joseph becomes a Mason. And I think things change dramatically. I think his vision or view of Masonry changes somewhere from the Danite period up to 1842, and anyway, he suddenly is like loving Masonry and can't get enough of it, and is eating it up, and becomes a Mason very quickly. Creates Masonic lodges all over Nauvoo and the surrounding Mormon areas, and then he does the endowment to a few men, which seems to be a very Masonic-like.
Ceremony.
And then the Relief Society is created a few days later, and he uses Masonic terminology to describe the Relief Society. There's Masonic terminology in there like crazy. At the very least, originally Joseph Smith envisioned them as a female Masonic organization, maybe a Masonic priesthood organization. And then he's got the endowed men that are Masonic, but they're endowed through the endowment. And then later, these two come together kind of in the Quorum of the Anointed, which is basically people who have been endowed. But originally, it was a quorum. And the quorum would transact business. They would make decisions. Men and women would meet together and make decisions, for example, a proclamation. We have the proclamation on the family. Well, they did a proclamation, and these men and women in this quorum decided stuff about this proclamation. So it's a very interesting merging of these things. And I think if Joseph Smith would have been around longer, we would have seen more about how the Relief Society fit into this Masonic priesthood-ish Quorum of the Anointed. I don't know how that all would have worked out, but it would have been interesting to see how it would have. I think there's more that would have happened along those lines.
All right. So one of the things we've talked a little bit about a few different types of masonry. So there's not just one masonry. So can you tell us what these different types are?
Right. So it's a little bit complicated. So So the foundational masonry is craft or Blue Lodge masonry. That's the first 3 degrees. And that is, and these other things that branch out from that are not above it. This is considered top, Master Mason. There's 3 degrees and you end up Master Mason. But then there's York Rite
like
Masonry.
3 degrees of glory?
Well, I don't know, maybe. there's York Rite and there's Scottish Rite Masonry. And in America, there different Mason, different degrees would kind of get imported over from Europe where Masonry was more established and would kind of independently get started up here and there. And then as time went on, people would say, we better organize this group of degrees and we better organize that group of degrees. And so you have kind of a building of what they called York Rite, even though there was another York Rite in England, but there's an Americanized York Rite, and that's primarily what I talk about. But there's a Scottish Rite that was more popular over there, but that was also here. They all tell similar stories. They all talk about temple. Masonry is all about temple, either temple grounds or in the temple itself. It can be different temples, but it's all about temples. In the York Rite, so you have the foundational three degrees, first 3 degrees of craft or Blue Lodge Masonry, it's called. And then you have a set of degrees called Royal Arch Masonry, another set of degrees called Cryptic Rite Masonry, and another set of degrees called Knights Templar Masonry. So that's the York Rite. And each of those sets of degrees have interesting things. And I think in particular, Royal Arch Masonry and Cryptic Rite Masonry have interesting parallels with Joseph Smith and may have been influential. So can I tell you about Cryptic Rite Masonry? So Cryptic Rite Masonry comes from the word crypt. And so the idea is, so the rituals and the myth of Cryptic Rite Masonry has to do with Enoch, the prophet Enoch, and Mount Moriah, which later is where Solomon's temple would be built, but at this time it's just a mount. And Enoch has a vision, a wonderful vision, and in that vision he is to build a temple. And he builds it inside Mount Moriah, an underground crypt. And so it's called Cryptic Masonry because it's in a crypt or it's underground. So he builds this cryptic temple or crypt temple or underground temple. And in that temple, he puts a triangular gold plate. And on the gold plate, remember earlier we talked about how God revealed the word, the name of God to Adam, and it got passed on. Enoch gets that word, the ineffable word. He writes it on this triangular plate, and he puts it in this underground temple. And then he is, and he knows that there's destruction coming, right? Noah's flood's on its way, and people are all evil and all that jazz. So he knows the world's going to be destroyed, and so he records two records. And these records are written on pillars. And one is on a pillar of marble, and the other one is on a pillar of brass. And on the brass record, he records the history of creation and a lot of stuff about the principles of arts and sciences and of the principles of masonry. Now think, when we're talking about this, think, try substituting masonry and gospel in your mind, and it's kind of interesting how that works. So he writes the principles of masonry on this record, which is on a giant pillar. The other pillar is in marble, and on that he also he writes on there that there is a treasure buried in the hill below, a very valuable treasure, and he says that he who has wisdom can find this treasure, and that it would be recovered at some future time and restore the lost principles of masonry. So, the pillar of marble gets wiped out in the flood, and then you know every the world gets basically destroyed, but this stuff is buried underneath. Now let's fast forward to Royal Arch Masonry, okay, which is really the story of masonry in about 600 BC, about the time that the temple gets destroyed, and the ruins are, you know, there's temple ruins, and then some people come going through the temple rubble, masons, and they find a stone lid, which is the lid that Enoch had created, which is the entrance to the cryptic temple. They open up that stone lid, and they descend down into there, and there they find the Ark of the Covenant, which is in, and there's actually 9 chambers in this underground temple. And the Ark of the Covenant, so there's a missing piece of the story. We don't know how the Ark got in there, but it does. And this ought to sound familiar to Indiana Jones
fans. I was just going to say, yeah.
Yeah. They take the Ark out, and they bring it to the Grand Council. We talked about the Grand Council. And the Grand Council, the high priest of the Grand Council, is wearing a breastplate of cut glass, and in the Ark he gets a translating key, it's called. And there's also a lost book of scripture that's in the Ark, the Book of the Law, which interestingly Joseph later names his journal the Book of the Law of the Lord, names it the same thing. And yeah,
the Strangites have a book of scripture called the Book of the Law of the Lord.
Okay, yeah.
Did you know that?
So we have, no, I'd heard that and I'd forgotten that. But it's using the same theme. And this is from the Old Testament. So
and I'm trying to know if there's probably shouldn't ask you this, but I'm wondering if there's a connection with the Book of the Law of the Lord and the Strangites.
I'm guessing that Joseph,
Or is Strang just borrowing from Joseph to pull that out?
You got a lot of borrowings going on, right? So you got the Old Testament stuff. The Masons take Old Testament stories, they expand them, right? They take Old Testament stuff, myth, and they make it their own myth, but they repurpose it and expand the stories and fill in additional details. Joseph Smith seems to take Masonic, both Old Testament and or Masonic myth, and repurposes that. James Strang, I don't know. He's getting something somewhere. I don't know where. That's
me
a good question
for Bill Shepard. Hopefully,
there you go. There you go. So anyway, the high priest then I'll get to that in a second. He takes the key and he translates the characters, and they find out that it is the ineffable word, the name of God, which had been lost. So now we got to back up to the first 3 degrees. Hiram Abiff is the dude that's got the word.
Now Hiram Abiff is a big important person in masonry.
Yes.
So we're getting right to the crux of the story here.
Yeah. Hiram Abiff is a master mason. He gets killed. Well, these ruffians try to extort the word from him. He refuses to give it up, and they kill him.
This is in the days of Solomon now we're talking
this is
about,
in the
right?
days of Solomon, yes. So these myths you've got. We've got cryptic with Royal Arch and the craft masonry. And so all these stories are interrelated, and they're kind of out of order, but they all depend on each other. And it's kind of interesting to weave through all these and pull these stories together. But master, the word was lost when Hiram Abiff is killed. And then Solomon creates a substitute word, which, I will point out that there are some similarities to that word and what is said in the temple, the LDS ceremony at the veil. There is some relationship there, and with this substitute word. Then in the Royal Arch, They find the true word carved on the Ark of the Covenant. The high priest, wearing a breastplate, using a key, translates the word and restores it. The masons rejoice. This is of the Grand Council. This is the high priest of the Grand Council. They rejoice, saying, "Long lost, now found. Holiness to the Lord." They all shout that in unison. Hmm. It's a wonderful moment in Masonic history because the true word has been restored.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with historian Claire Barris. In our next conversation, we're going to talk about Joseph Smith. When did he switch from treasure digging to looking for scripture?
Around 1823, Joseph's emphasis shifts from searching for common buried treasure to restoring lost scripture on gold plates, right? There's a huge shift.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe to patreon.com/gospeltangents. And for just $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview without any interruption. If you'd like a paperback version of our transcripts, go to amazon.com and do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview. Also, if you'd like to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website, and I'll be able to send you a transcript as soon as they are completed, and click the subscribe button. You can also find our latest information on facebook.com/gospeltangents, as well as we're on Twitter @gospeltangents. And don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts. The link is at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents, and you can subscribe there. Also, please give us a 5-star review. If you want to support all of the podcasts as part of the Dialogue Podcast Network, go to lyceum.fm, that's lyceum.fm, and do a search for Dialogue Podcast Network or Gospel Tangents, because, you know, that's a pretty cool one, too. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some of our great videos. Thanks again.